uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And greetings, my friends. Speaking from behind the good old working class stainless steel microphone high up in the Green Mountains of the People's Republic of Vermont, Tom Hartman here with you. Broadcasting live on stations from California to North Carolina, streaming down from outer space on the Sirius satellite system, beaming around the planet on radiopower.org, whiterosesociety.org, Live365's American FM, and others. Welcome to our program, and on cable systems in 29 states on cable radio network. Welcome to our program. It's the first hour of our Friday program, which is traditionally our time for Brunch with Bernie. Congressman Bernie Sanders became the first independent in 1991, first independent congressman elected to the House of Representatives in over 40 years. He has been since reelected seven times, the longest serving independent in the entire 230-year history of the House of Representatives. Eh, Bernie?
Well, I wasn't there at the beginning, Tom, but something like that, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, great to have you here. And today, Bernie, you're broadcasting from live from WBTN, one of our affiliates in Bennington, Vermont, and also the home of Southern Vermont College.
Right. I'm very excited. They have a great communications program. They're carrying your show, and that, along with WDEV in Waterbury, are the only two stations in Vermont that are carrying the show. And what excites me very much is that, Tom, you and I and the listeners talk a whole lot about media consolidation, the fact that it is harder and harder to hear alternative anti-corporate points of view, the fact that we're losing localism, we're losing the ability of local folks to be talking to local folks about what's going on in their local community. And WBTN is doing all of that under the auspices of Southern Vermont College, a very fine college right here in Bennington. And I wanted Barbara Snyder, who is the professor of communications and the director of the radio station here, to be talking about what they do here, because it seems to me this is a model for good local radio. Barbara, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Congressman Sanders, and thank you, Mr. Hartman, for having me on today.
Hey, Barbara, glad to have you here. By the way, let me just make a very quick announcement. If any of our listeners have questions for Congressman Sanders, we will have certainly will be open for that today as well. Right, Bernie?
Absolutely.
Okay. Our telephone number, 1-866-889-8894, toll-free anywhere in the United States, 866-889-8894. And if you want to drop into the live chat room, the website is tomhartman.com. So,
Barbara,
what do we
mean by local radio right here at WBTN? What does that mean?
The beauty of WBTN is that we are the only local voice around here. We program live as often as we possibly can. And on top of that, as a community-based radio station, our intention is to bring you competing voices. We are not, we don't have a conservative bent. We don't have a liberal bent. We believe in giving you a little bit of everything. We believe that we can be a little bit of everything for everybody. We have student-run shows. We turn the airwaves over to our students in the evening. We have brought on board community voices where we have members of the community who come in and run their own shows. We interview people in the community, both nonprofit and governmental and for-profit businesses, on a regular basis to talk about what they're doing and how it impacts the community. We have Democracy Now. We also have Bill O'Reilly.
Good.
And we have old-time radio.
Good. And people can learn about what's going on in their community from this radio station and can participate.
And participate. And they do. They call up. They are active supporters of our station and of our school. And more important than that, we run it as a learning institution. I run the communications program at WBTN, Southern Vermont College, through the radio station. Students here are learning at the business of the media.
That's great.
Okay, and we have, Tom, with us a couple of students. We're going to speak very briefly. Erica, what do you do on the radio station here?
I am pretty much in charge of running other events besides just radio shows, and I've been doing some live remotes outside in the community and in the area. This week I've been doing a radiothon, so I'm pretty much in charge of the events here.
Learning anything?
Absolutely. I'm constantly learning, and I've just spent my week here and it's been one big learning experience, especially this week.
Lou Bedore, what do you do here?
Here at WBTN, I do a variety of different things. I do everything from two different radio shows, one in the afternoon and one in the evening that's a student show, to helping out with the production of advertisements and the writing of advertisements, all the way into the engineering of whatever program's coming on.
Enjoying it?
I love it.
Okay. I mean, one of the exciting things is that this station, to a significant degree, is programming is produced and directed by the students themselves, which I think is a good learning experience. Tom, let's shift gears, if we can, for a moment, because when we talk about students, when we talk about education and learning, I hope the listeners know that Bush's new budget is an absolute disaster
yeah.
for education.
Let's, Bernie, the federal TRIO programs, I suspect that most people don't even know what TRIO programs are, much less Upward Bound and Talent Search and some of the GEAR, the federal GEAR UP program. 2,800 people served, TRIO programs across the country serving 850,000 kids.
And I suspect more people know about it than you think. I'll tell you why.
Yeah.
Some of us have parents who never went to college.
Hey, Bernie, can I interrupt you for just a second?
Yeah.
Your voice, all of your voices are coming in, smashing the top of the modulation meter. If somebody there can back off the gain that's being fed into the phone lines, I think we're getting some overmodulation here.
Okay, how is
that? Thank you. I think that should be better.
Yeah, okay. Just pot it down a bit. I can crank up the gain on this end and clean it up, but when it mashes, then it cuts off when you get loud. So anyway, go ahead.
All right. What this program is about, and I think many of the listeners may be familiar with it, everybody knows that if you don't have a lot of money, getting into college in this time in American history just ain't easy. The cost of college is soaring. People don't have a lot of money. We're seeing fewer low-income kids go to college. What Bush did in his budget is eliminated the TRIO program, which is precisely that program which is helping over 800,000 young people get the mentoring and get the support that they need to go to college and to stay in college. In my own state of Vermont, it's about 3,000 young people. And I think that to cut the lifeline for college for those people at the same time as he's giving hundreds of billions of dollars in tax breaks to the wealthiest 1% is an absolute outrage. So when this guy talks about, quote-unquote, leaving no child behind, he's leaving hundreds of thousands of children behind just in this cut alone, not to mention other cuts that he's proposing in education.
Bernie, any idea why it is that I first learned, I think I keep up on what's going on the progressive side of things. I first learned about this reading about it on your website. I mean, to the best of my knowledge, the New York Times hasn't covered this. The Washington Post, none of the mainstream media certainly haven't seen it on CNN or MSNBC or anything. Why is there such an absolute deafening silence out there about the consequences of Bush's budget when the budget's out? It's not like the Social Security program that they're keeping secret for the last minute. I mean, it's out there.
That's a good question. I could tell you we had a press conference in Vermont on this, which was not widely attended. The Burlington, our big newspaper, was much more concerned about the local basketball team than they are about the fact that 3,000 kids in this state and 800,000 nationally may lose their opportunity to go to college.
Yeah.
It is, again, I think, you and I have talked about what corporate control over the media means and the tie-in between corporate media and the Bush administration. But I think that there is a real hostility to working class issues, working class needs. It's the same reason we don't discuss our disastrous trade policy, why there's very little discussion about trade unionism. It's just one of those things the corporate media chooses not to talk about. They much prefer a basketball, the Super Bowl, and following Bush all over the world, whatever he says, whatever he does, rather than talking about the horrendous impact that these cuts are going to have, in this case, on students, working-class students, lower-income students. His cuts on veterans are reprehensible. There will be more and more veterans unable to get the health care that they have been promised. But we don't hear a whole lot of discussion about that, and you're absolutely right.
Bernie, help me to understand this. You're a member of Congress. You hang out with these folks. You have, I'm presuming, friends who are conservatives, or at least colleagues, people that you know well, and you probably in all these years that you've been in Congress, you have some insight into their thinking process. What is the rationalization that these people put forward when they say we've got to cut these programs for example, for college aid?
Well, they don't do very well. As you remember, when the president was forced to actually engage in a debate during the last presidential election, he doesn't do very well answering these questions. He survives because nobody asks him that question. And you can bet that his next press conference, there will not be anybody there who will say, Mr. President, you talk about not leaving any child behind. You're throwing 800,000 young American working class kids, significantly limiting their opportunities to go to college. Do you think that question will be asked? I doubt it. I think the party line, and by the way, I do not think that every Republican is going to share this budget priority of the president. I think the party line is we have a huge deficit. So we're going to have to cut sometimes programs that we prefer not to. We can save $1 billion doing that. But then if you say, if you're so concerned about the deficit, why do you want to make permanent hundreds of billions of dollars in tax breaks for the wealthiest 1%? Well, you combine those two things, they don't have a whole lot to say. They would prefer not to talk about it.
Well,
my hope is that there'll be a number of Republicans who will not support this particular cut.
Well, one of the things that I find fascinating, are you familiar with this? The release of Frank Luntz's document here, this 160-page playbook for the Republicans yesterday?
I'm familiar with Luntz in general. I'm not familiar with
this. This was just leaked. Luntz apparently is furious. He wrote a 160-page playbook for the Republicans on how to win in 2006. And it basically is a series of how to lie on this issue, how to lie on this issue, how to redirect attention on this issue.
Absolutely.
And he makes the point in there that the average American, he's been doing polling, of course, he's a pollster among, as well as like an NLP expert, a psychology expert. He made the point that the average American doesn't realize that only something like 20-some-odd% of Americans, a very small percentage of Americans, actually realize that the budget cuts, that the so-called tax cuts, these tax deferrals that Bush put in there, tax cuts for the rich, are responsible for over a third, maybe a half, a big chunk of the budget deficit, but that over 80 or 85% of Americans, when you talk about pork barrel spending or wasteful spending in Congress, then their eyes light up and you get a positive bounce on the people meter. And so he's saying to the Republicans, don't talk about tax cuts in the context of budgets. Instead, talk about wasteful spending. And this is apparently what he means by wasteful spending.
Right. And you will have a media absolutely complicit in this, not talking about the impact of what these cuts are. Many people, I used to wonder why it is that some of these folks would get up there and they rant and rave about some stupid $50,000 program, which in fact may well have been a stupid $50,000 program. So why are you talking about $50,000 when there are programs for billions of dollars that we don't talk about? And their understanding is that people will respond more to $50,000, which people can grasp, then billions of dollars. Well, what the heck is billions of dollars?
Right, yeah. You can get more people freaked out about an art exhibit in a publicly supported library that has a pornographic picture in it than you can about $1 billion being lost by the Pentagon last week.
Exactly.
For example.
And Luntz understands that very well.
Yeah, and so do the Republicans. 20 minutes past the hour. It's Brunch with Bernie. We're with Congressman Bernie Sanders. He's at Southern Vermont College in Bennington at WBTN, one of our affiliates. 20 minutes past the hour. We'll be right back.
Attention, Tom Hartman listeners. I'm here with Brush Lintball.
This is the old Brush show, Brush Lintball.
To tell you about DemocraticMatch.com. You're listening to Tom.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
They never stop thinking about new ways to harm our country and our people, and neither do we.
This is an impressive crowd, the haves and the have-mores. Some people call you the elite. I call you my base.
You gave them the old razzle-dazzle. You razzle-dazzled them.
Oh, he sure did.
You gave them an act with lots of flash in it. Made them believe you were compassionate. Gave them the old hocus-pocus. Yeah, misdirected them. With 9/11 and Saddam Hussein.
And welcome back. 25 minutes past the hour. It's Tom Hartman, the Tom Hartman radio program with Congressman Bernie Sanders. Our Brunch with Bernie segment, 1-866-889-8894, if you'd like to call in. And pretty much any topic you want to talk about today. It's Friday afternoon. And Congressman Sanders is in the studios of WBTN in Bennington, Vermont, Southern Vermont College. And Bernie, let's go back to this college loan thing. There's the TRIO program. There are other programs that the Bush administration has set up to cut as well.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, you need to get a little closer, Bernie.
Okay. At a time when he talks about leaving no child behind, and that gets you back to Frank Luntz and how they use language.
Right.
He is savaging education, primary, secondary, and college education in this country. In
yeah.
terms of no child left behind, there are massive cuts that are in store for local school districts all over the country, which are going to mean higher property taxes or lower quality educational services for the kids. In terms of higher education, you're not only talking about the elimination of the TRIO program, but the Perkins Loan program, safe and drug-free schools, state scholarship program as well. In other words, when middle-class families are struggling to be able to send their kids to college, he is going to make it that much harder to do so, and I think that is
just Yeah, this is just absolutely wrong. And one of the other points that Frank Luntz made in his memo, in his talking point memo, was he said that whenever Republicans talk about the budget deficit or the economic recovery or lack thereof, that they always need to mention 9/11 in the same sentence. And 9/11, I mean, you know, it ground the southern part of New York City to a halt for a few weeks or for a few months, arguably, maybe even a year, you could say. We lost 3,000 lives. A couple of businesses were hurt. A couple of businesses went out of business, but I think most of them have bounced back. And yet the Republicans, how can they claim that the entire nation got shut down? I mean, the airline industry was certainly hit. People were afraid to fly for a few months. But beyond that, I mean, how can they claim that the whole nation, that the whole, you know, the budget deficits are the cause of 9/11 or are caused by, you know, it just, at what point are the American people going to say, hey, wait a minute, you know, it's we're past that now. Let's look at the real issues here.
Well, Tom, they get away with that. Frank Luntz knows that. Paul Rove knows. They get away with that because you have a media complicit in the fraud.
Yeah.
You don't have a media saying, excuse me, Mr. President, you are giving hundreds of billions of dollars tax breaks to people who don't need it. Do you think that makes more sense than helping working class families send their kids to college or building affordable housing or making sure that the American people have health insurance? Now, how often do you hear that question posed to the president?
It's not.
So they get away with it. They say, no problem. We know the media is not going to raise these issues. We can say anything we want. And I give Luntz, Karl Rove a lot of credit. They assume the media will never ask important questions. You can say whatever you want, and life goes on.
Well, to some extent, they're controlling that by putting their shills into the White House press room and deciding who they're going to call on and having, you know, designated seating. People have to sit in particular chairs, and then the president comes in with a seating chart and knows who he's going to ask questions of?
I thought what was interesting, I've mentioned this before, about the debates, when he had debates with Kerry, how wretched and uncomfortable the president was when he had to answer real questions.
Yeah.
Because it's so unusual.
Yeah.
So, we've got to try to change.
Yeah, so very much so. 1-866-889-8894. We've got a couple calls. We'll pick them up right after this break. It's the Tom Hartman radio program, Brunch with Bernie. Bernie, we're going to have to call you back on another line, get a better audio quality here. 29 minutes past the hour. We'll be right back.
A party.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
If this were a dictatorship, it'd be a heck of a lot easier. Just so long as I'm the dictator.
You gave them the old, stay the course, I'm your man. Why, he'll flip-flop ya. He has no strength to lead. Yes, this you feared. Why, soldiers' jobs and surplus disappeared.
And welcome back. 27 minutes before the hour. It's the Tom Hartman radio program. Tom Hartman here with you on this beautiful Friday afternoon. Congressman Bernie Sanders with us. Our Brunch with Bernie segment, the first hour of our Friday program. And, Bernie, we've got a couple of calls. Let's go to the phone lines here. Rick in Grand Rapids, Michigan on the line. Our number, by the way, 1-866-889-8894. 8894. Toll free across the country, 1-866-889-8894. Rick, what's up?
Yes, good afternoon, gentlemen. Hey, Bernie, are you folks back in session next week?
Yes.
Well, one of the things I want to say, and I don't know how you two fellows feel about this, but, you know, we don't really like Bush and what he's done domestically and internationally, but I guess I have to give him some credit for this prescription drug plan. It's immensely helped my mom, for instance, and I note that some people, you know, and they should have known in the Congress, you folks should have been informed by the administration how much it would actually have cost. They were somewhat deceptive, but I think in principle it is a good thing, and I see now that some Republicans, especially in the House, and maybe even some conservative Democrats want to scale back on this, and Bush wants to, he says, no way. You know, he's not vetoing anything. He says if they do that, he'll veto the bill. And I do think, you know, even if he's doing it for politically expedient reasons, I guess I do have to give him credit for standing fast on this and preserving this this drug benefit.
Rick, let me I know something about that legislation.
Okay, go ahead.
What the legislation does, though, there are some good things in it. If your mom is lower income, it's going to help her. But by and large, for the amount of money that we as taxpayers are putting into it, and what has recently come out, as you know, it's going to cost far, far more than was anticipated, we're getting very little value. What some of us are fighting for is a program which will do far more for your mother and for the senior citizens of this country than Bush's proposal would allow. And the problems with his proposal is, among other things, he does not allow Medicare to negotiate lower drug prices with the pharmaceutical industry. And actually, the benefits for most people, if you're not low income, are not terribly good. So what we can do by spending less money than Bush is spending is develop a better program for your mother and for seniors all over this country.
But I guess my concern is what happened in the early 70s when Nixon, and it was a very meager program, but he proposed a guaranteed annual income, and the conservative says no, because that's socialism. You can't do that. And the Democrats said, well, it's not enough, and then we wound up getting nothing. I'm just afraid that if they start tinkering with this, that both sides will find something wrong with it, and then it'll be lost altogether. That's
well, what I could tell you, Rick, is my understanding of this program is 1 year after its implementation, seniors will be paying more out of their pocket with this program for their prescription drugs than was the case before the program was implemented. So I think we can make very, very substantial improvements. And I should tell you that on that issue, Rick, there are a lot of Republicans that I am working with who agree with me. One of the things that we are fighting very hard for, and Bush and the drug companies are against us, is the simple idea that Americans and American pharmacists and prescription drug distributors should be able to purchase safe and affordable medicine, not only from Canada but Europe, at a fraction of the price. That would lower the cost of drugs in this country for everybody very substantially and make that particular program a much better one. I think we can do a lot better, Rick.
What about Bernie, just having Medicare negotiate decent drug prices the same way the Pentagon does for the VA hospitals?
The VA does a very good job, and the Bush administration supporting the drug companies. Drug companies go crazy when we talk about this because they are making huge profits off of the American people. You're right. So the ability of Medicare to negotiate a price as the Veterans Administration does is something that this bill prohibits, which is one of the reasons that many of us voted against it.
Yeah. Thanks a lot for the call, Rick, and for raising the issue. I do appreciate it.
Yeah, Rick raises a good issue.
Yeah.
Some people will be helped, but we could do a lot better. In my view.
There you go. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Tom in Western New York State on the line. Hey, Tom, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Bernie.
Hi, Tom.
I'm just wondering why there isn't any outrage over the Federal Reserve keeps saying they control inflation by suppressing the wages of labor. And the only way you can do that is by creating job insecurity. So there actually is economic policy to create unemployment and underemployment in this country.
Well, Greenspan said in the New York Times about 5 years, it was quoted in the Wall Street Journal about 5 years ago, that he felt that part of his job was to maintain a certain level of worker insecurity and to control wage inflation. That's what you're talking about, Tom.
Yeah, well, they're coming out and saying, you know, inflation in general is controlled by controlling wages. I mean, USA Today just had an interview with a guy last Tuesday from the Federal Reserve of St. Louis. And, you know, they're not trying to control inflation through, you know, excessive profits or capital gains or you know, stock options or anything like that.
Or CEO wages. Bernie, you're taking
Tom,
this?
Tom is exactly right. Look, let's be very clear. What the media does not talk about, and what Frank Luntz and Karl Rove spend enormous amount of energy making sure that we don't talk about, is the war that is being waged against the working class and the middle class today. They give this rosy scenario. I deal with Greenspan every year. He comes before my committee. The economy is expanding. We're creating all kinds of jobs. Everything is wonderful. Really? Well, from my perspective, the middle class is shrinking. Poverty is increasing. Real wages are declining. People are working longer hours for low wages. There is a war. Our good jobs are going to China by the millions. That's the reality that American workers are seeing. But that's the reality that Bush will never talk about in a million years. And that's the reality that most of the media will never pick up on.
Yeah. Tom, thanks for the call. Good to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number, Tim in Michigan on the line. Hey, Tim, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom, how you doing?
Great, great. What's up?
Well, first thing, before I ask Bernie a question, I wanted to give you a compliment. You know, I tune in to Hannity and Limbaugh every now and again to hear the other side, and they rip every new talk show host that comes up for the left, but I've never heard your name. You must scare the heck out of them.
In my dreams, Tim. What's up?
Okay. Well, anyway, there was an article in the USA Today by Lou Dobbs, about Lou Dobbs, and how he's ranting and raving about the very same thing Congressman Sanders is talking about.
Right, Lou Dobbs, the Republican.
Right, and I just wondered if anybody's aware of that, and if Bernie could comment on what he's saying.
Sure. Tim, Lou Dobbs is a very interesting guy, and I've been on his show on a number of occasions. Lou Dobbs, as I understand it, is a pretty conservative guy. He's a Republican. And Lou Dobbs woke up one day and said, what is happening to America? Why do we have policies in Congress which encourage corporations to throw American workers out on the street and move to China? He calls it the exporting of America. And he has done a fantastic job. And actually, within CNN, his show is doing very, very well. I think he's attracting more and more viewers because he's raising the right issues and he's confronting corporate America and the CEOs of corporate America and the apologists for corporate America, who are making it clearer and clearer they're going to sell out not only the working people of America, but this country entirely and move to China. And he has been standing up to them, and I applaud him. And, in fact, you'd be surprised that a whole lot of conservatives share his view. And we've been working as progressives with those conservatives.
Well, I certainly hope it happens because, you know, this business of free trade's one thing, fair trade's a whole other deal. And
you got it,
right?
You got it.
Well said, Tim.
These guys are shameless. Yeah. They are absolutely shameless. You know, it was the American people that made them great, and now they're selling us out and moving to China as fast as they can.
Yeah, and, you know, in America, we used to have a conversation about how labor produced value. In other words, it was like, you know, there were phrases like exploited workers. I mean, everybody understood that nothing happens until somebody does something.
Right.
And that all the value that a corporation has, all the value that's in a product, in some way comes about because somebody is working to make something happen. Now we talk about corporations creating jobs, like they just create them out of thin air and decide, you know, benevolently to pay us. And it's people have to wake up in this country. It's just outrageous. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Tom in St. Paul, Minnesota on the line. Hey, Tom, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. Yeah, Bernie, just to elaborate a little bit more on this Lou Dobbs thing, the other conservative who's prominent, Kevin Phillips, who wrote the book Wealth and Democracy, also is shocked at what's going on, and his main point is how they have succeeded, and I've called before on this, conflating democracy with market economics. And I think that's what Lou Dobbs is pointing out, that they market economics is supposed to be subordinate to democracy, and somehow the right-wing Limbaughs of the world have convinced their followers that capitalism means democracy. And when the people get together in democracy and vote to do certain things, they yell socialism. When it's really democracy spreading it to the people, but the conservative or these right wingers who listen to this pablum think that democracy and power to the people means socialism, which they think means autocratic, less freedom. You know, they've really succeeded with this Frank Luntz yelling out that socialism when really it's just we're spreading democracy.
Well, Tom, your point is right about Kevin Phillips. And I should tell you, we have introduced legislation. I've introduced legislation in Congress that would repeal permanent normal trade relations with China, completely repeal it, and renegotiate our trade relations with China based on fair trade policies, not on what we have right now. Of the 70 or so co-sponsors, I think we have at least 17 or 18 Republicans, including conservative Republicans, who agree with Lou Dobbs and agree with the vast majority of the people that it is insane when we have lost almost 3 million good-paying manufacturing jobs in the last 4 years. We're on the verge of losing millions of even better-paying information technology jobs to China and India, and corporate America is basically boasting. They're saying, hey, that's what we're going to do. We don't need American workers anymore. And the Congress and the President of the United States say, hey, no problem. Destroy the economy for the middle class. So Dobbs has played a very good role. Kevin Phillips is a brilliant writer. He has talked about the destruction of the middle class and the working class. And you're going to see some coming together among progressives and conservatives on this issue.
Thanks, Tom, for the call. Bernie, well, actually, let me just move along here. Wayne in Fort Worth, Texas is on the line. Hey, Wayne, what's up?
Not much. I just thought I'd put my 2 cents worth in on what the Republican Party has done to the rail industry in America. Ever since Ronald Reagan deregulated the rail industry, we've come from over 1 million people working for the railroad down to about 220,000 working for the railroad. They've allowed the rail industry to gobble each other up. So yep. There's about 6 or maybe 7 major railroads left in the United States.
Mm-hmm. Made John Snow into a multimillionaire, Wayne.
Pardon?
It made John Snow, the current Treasury Secretary, into a multimillionaire. That's how he made his money.
Now, Wayne is absolutely right. Compared to Europe and Japan, our infrastructure is a disaster. We put cars on the roads rather than building a strong rail system, both for freight and for passengers. We should be investing more into that, and the Bush people want to invest less in Amtrak. But the deindustrialized, what Wayne is saying is our country is becoming deindustrialized. We're becoming hamburger flippers. We're working at Walmarts. We're not producing real products. We're losing our blue-collar jobs, and we're starting to hemorrhage our white-collar information technology jobs. And many people are wondering what is going to be there for our kids and grandchildren if we're not really producing real products. And on top of that, if you're not producing real products, what about national security? You're going to be dependent upon other countries for the military weaponry and equipment that you need.
Yeah. Wayne, thanks for the call.
Can I say one more thing?
Sure, go for it.
We've been in negotiations for the past 5 years, the machinists, with the rail unions, and our contract lasts for 5 years. So we're essentially went completely 5-year period without a contract. So... And the federal laws say that they're not supposed to do that.
Yeah.
But the mediation board that they have appointed to us was appointed by President Bush, and they won't release us from mediation. So we're just kind of at a stagnated point. So
we have a labor
what
department.
What do we do?
Yeah.
Wayne raises another. Thank you, Wayne, because you're raising a lot of good issues. And the other issue is right now the Constitution says the workers are able to form unions and have unions, and certainly this Bush administration is loading up all of the labor boards with right-wingers who are anti-unions, and working people are finding it harder and harder to get a decent contract or even to organize a union. And that's just part of the overall war against the working class in this country that Bush and his corporate friends are waging.
So what can Wayne do, Bernie?
Well, we have to organize and educate and get people to stand up and fight for their rights, because if we don't do that, it's not going to be much for our kids and our grandchildren.
So, Wayne, it sounds like the bottom line is you're going to have to get politically active and get somebody other than the Republicans in power.
Well, actually, we have been politically actionable for the last at least 5 years and tried to get Congress involved in our dispute.
And the machinists, by the way, are one of the better unions in this country.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah, for sure. Wayne, thanks a lot for the call. Keep it up. Keep up the good work, and don't give up the fight. Bill in Raleigh, North Carolina, on the line. Hey, Bill, welcome to the program.
Well, hi, Tom and Bernie.
Hello.
I'm a lifelong Democrat. I'm a working man. Always felt that the Democratic Party supported the working man. But when I hear that the Democratic Party is the ones that are backing the illegal aliens in this country, okay, saying that they should be allowed to come in. I don't know if this is just the Republican side saying this, or is this true, or is it just...
There's people on both sides saying that, Bill.
Well, the president is saying that, too, you know.
I understand that.
Yeah.
That's the only thing that the people in this country agree on is they don't like the illegal aliens coming into this country.
Mm-hmm.
We were sold on capitalism that supply and demand when Clinton was in. He said that it's going to be a supply and demand thing. There's going to be so many jobs to
yeah.
be filled.
Bill, I got
to... That the wages are going to go up.
Yeah, and they didn't. It's this is the problem. We'll get back to Bernie's thoughts on this. Bill, thanks for the call. I do appreciate it, but we're out of time here. It's 10 minutes before the hour on the Tom Hartman program with Congressman Bernie Sanders.
Who is it?
Special delivery.
Who?
Pizza Man.
Hey, you're not the Pizza Man. You're the cable guy again.
Price Patrol.
No.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Good morning, America. How are you? Say, don't you know me? I'm your native son.
And welcome back. 5 minutes before the hour, it's the Tom Hartman Program with Congressman Bernie Sanders, our Brunch with Bernie segment. And, Bernie, we've got a couple of calls. Did you want to make a comment about...
Well, Bill raises an important issue, but he should know that it's not just the Democrats, it's the president, and it's the Republicans. Illegal immigration is illegal. I believe in immigration, absolutely. But Bill is right when he says that if you have a whole lot of illegal immigrants in an area, it's going to lower wages, which will cause significant problems for working people, and it's an issue that has to be dealt with.
Which seems to be why George Bush is in favor of
right. A lot of Republicans like it, and a lot of agricultural owners like it because they can get very, very cheap labor.
Yeah, bottom line. Greg in Florida, you're on the air. Greg? Oh, I'm sorry.
Greg.
Greg. Yeah, okay, there we go. That's the right line. Yep, Greg, you're live.
Yeah, this is Greg. How you doing?
Great. What's up?
All right. Another point of view of that is if you get 12 million undocumented illegal aliens coming into this country, it's another group that the poor and the middle class can focus their anger on. Take your eye off the ball. Okay, I'm mad at this Mexican who crossed the border and is doing the job that I used to do. And he's taking it for less money. He destroyed my livelihood and my family. Not the administration who set the policy, but that guy himself. Just like the Vietnamese that came into Texas to do the shrimping and...
Yeah, it's
your eye off the ball.
Yeah, it's the Michael Savage thing. It's pick on the victims.
That's right. These guys are very good, whether it's gay people or black people or immigrants, whoever it may be. On the other hand, I think there is a problem with illegal immigration that we've got to get a handle on. But obviously, we do not condone in any way racism and the division of our people up by ethnic background.
Yeah, as Greg correctly points out, let's condemn the policy, not the people. Terry in Indiana on the line. Terry?
Hello.
You are live, Terry. We got about 30 seconds.
All right. Well, I'm a first-time caller, long-time listener, and I always listen to you guys on Friday. I'm an independent truck driver, and my main question is, what are the Democrats doing about these high, high fuel prices? I mean, I'm paying up to $2 a gallon for fuel, and I'm spending an average of $500 to $600. You know, and my average fuel a month is $2,000 a week.
Got it, Terry. Terry, we're out of time here, but Bernie, we got 20 seconds there if you want to take a whack at
that.
Well,
I think what some of us are trying to do is demand the ending of OPEC, the Overseas Petroleum Exporting Commission, which is clearly an organization designed to artificially raise the price of petroleum. That's one of the things that some of us are trying to do.
So bust up OPEC. Interesting. Okay, great. Congressman Bernie Sanders with us today, our Brunch with Bernie segment. Bernie, thanks so much for being with us today.
Okay, good to be with you.
We'll see you next week. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, the radio support group of, by, and for We the People.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information. rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. It's the Tom Hartman Program. We're tuning in as easy as getting a White House press pass if you're a gay hooker. Yeah, Jeff Gannon has his website up now, jeffgannon.com. You can go there and donate money to him if you would like. Apparently, he's staking out a new career as the official Republican martyr. Oh, my goodness. Did you hear this story, speaking of Republicans, about the Attorney General of Kansas? This from the, this particular story that I'm reading you came from WBAY-TV, Channel 2 in Kansas, in Wichita. The Attorney General of Kansas wants to know the detailed history of the sex lives of nearly 90 women who received late-term abortions. Court documents show that Phil Klein wants to search the documents for evidence of crimes under laws that limit late-term abortion and require mandatory reporting of suspected child sexual abuse. Under the order signed by a judge, the Attorney General would get records that would include each patient's name, medical history, details of her sex life, details of her birth control practices, and her psychological profile. Vrr, interesting. And in fact, the Attorney General has issued a press release for immediate release, February 24, 2005. The headline is Statement by Attorney General Phil Klein in response to a call for investigation of the rape of Kansas children. This is called reframing. Senator and Dr. Barnett and Senators Wagle and Journey are correct. Rape is a serious crime. When a 10, 11, or 12-year-old is pregnant, they have been raped under Kansas law. As the state's chief law enforcement officer, I have the duty to investigate and prosecute child rape and other crimes in order to protect Kansas children. Of course. Of course. Yes. And any child care professional who is dealing with a pregnant 10-year-old should be calling, it, by law, is required, in fact, to notify, either law enforcement authorities or social services, depending on the state. I think it's law enforcement now in pretty much every state. But they're, under this rubric, under this excuse, under this stating that this is what this is all about, they are making these blanket subpoenas asking for the records of all the women who got these abortions, regardless of their age, so that they can sort through them and find the ones who might be underage. So I called up the Kansas, there's a phone number here, it's a contact of Whitney E. Watson. The phone number is 785, I'm not giving out something in secret, I got this off the internet, off the Attorney General's website, right, at accesskansas.org/ etc. Anyhow, Whitney E. Watson is the press secretary for Phil Klein, the Kansas Attorney General. His telephone number is 785-296-2219. And I called him up today to ask a question, and this is just as far as I got. So take a listen here.
Hello, this is Whitney Watson, Director of Communications and Personnel for Kansas Attorney General Phil Klein. I'm sorry I missed your call, but leave me your name, your telephone number, along with a brief message at the sound of the tone, and I will return your call just as quickly as I can. Thank you for calling. Have a great day.
Recording.
Hello, Whitney. My name is Tom Hartman. I do a nationally syndicated radio talk show. Got your press release here today, and what I didn't see in it, and I'm curious about, is whether the Attorney General's office is going to be subpoenaing birth records throughout the state in homes for unwed mothers and hospitals to determine if there are children who have given birth underage, also indicating rape. If you could let me know, I'd appreciate it. My number is 802, etc. And so we will see if Whitney Watson or Phil Klein, the Attorney General for the state of Kansas, call us today. We will put them on the air immediately. It appears, though, from everything I've been able to read, that they are not interested in actually knowing if there are pregnant 10-year-olds out there, if they have babies. They only want to know about it if they've had abortions, which leads me to think that this is just another part of this this whole Republicans getting in our bedroom thing. You know, they if somebody's gay, they want to make it a crime. If somebody's using birth control, yeah, there are Republicans who want to make it a crime. And this has a long history. And in fact, they have effectively prevented the morning after pill, which prevents a fertilized ovum from implanting in the womb. So it prevents the actual pregnancy from even happening. They've prevented that, kept that off the marketplace. It's just, more of the Republicans in our bedroom and sticking their nose into our sexual activities and our bodies. It's just Kansas officials. Well, in fact, actually, the best statement on this, I think it was made by Nancy Keenan, president of NARAL Pro-Choice America. And, I should qualify all this by saying that I am convinced that there's an absolute consensus across the board that nobody thinks that anybody, everybody agrees that abortion is a tragedy and a disaster. You hear these stories from these right-wingers about women who've had 5, 10, 15 abortions and just go in and laugh about it, blah, blah, blah. First of all, I've never met in my life anybody who would want to have 10 or 15 surgical procedures, or even one. Particularly painful surgical procedures. Not to mention emotionally painful, just at the physical level. And secondly, I have known a few women in my life who have had abortions, and I can tell you that it has been a difficult, agonizing, painful thing for them. And at the time and afterwards. I don't think anybody takes this lightly. The question is, do you want the government sitting there between you and your doctor when you're discussing issues like this? And Nancy Keenan and the Republicans say, yes, we want to have a police officer or we want to have John Ashcroft in the room with the doctor and the woman monitoring the conversation. And in fact, they're monitoring the conversation so much that now under there's a whole bunch of federal legislation under the Bush administration that blocks funding of many different types of programs because there may be a discussion about birth control, not even about abortion, just about birth control. I'm telling you, this is the extreme right-wing part of the Catholic vote that the Republicans are trying to pick up, pandering to the Opus Dei segment of the Catholic population. And the fanatical Protestants who have fallen into that camp as well. Nancy Keenan, anyway, from NARAL Pro-Choice America, she says, and I quote, "These wildly intrusive subpoenas are just one more example of how out of control anti-choice politicians have become under President Bush's leadership. Add this witch hunt to the litany of recent outrages, like pharmacists who are refusing to fill birth control prescriptions, and legislation forcing women to report miscarriages to the police. Yes, Republicans have introduced legislation that would force you, if you are a woman and you have a miscarriage, to report it to the police." As Nancy Keenan continues, "Americans will and should be appalled at the notion of a state official issuing a mass subpoena for the most private personal information therein." She points out that his actions are reminiscent of Attorney General John Ashcroft's tactics. Ashcroft had demanded that medical professionals provide the records of thousands of women who had received abortions in California, Illinois, Michigan, Nebraska, New York, and Pennsylvania, even when those parties were not part of a lawsuit that challenged the abortion ban. He eventually, as I recall, backed off on that. But this is, so you're thinking about birth control. Well, keep in mind that your pharmacist may refuse to give it to you and lecture you on how you are immoral. Oh, you're thinking about an abortion. Well, keep in mind your personal records, including all of any questions your doctor may have asked you about who your sex partners are, about what your sex life is like, about what your psychiatric history is like, about whether you've ever been depressed, about whether you have any emotional vulnerabilities that somebody may have exploited. And all of this stuff is now going to be handed over to government officials and, of course, under the Freedom of Information Act, and rightly so, once it is in the hands of the government, to a large extent anyway, it has the potential of becoming entirely public. You may find, Ms. and Mrs. America, you may find your personal medical records and psychiatric records on the website of the Kansas Attorney General or somebody like him one of these days. So think twice before you think about going to a doctor. That's the message that they're trying to... And this guy has a long history, Phil Klein, this Kansas Attorney General. The Wichita Eagle, back in April of last year, wrote an article. Get this. Here's the headline. Kansas Attorney General Phil Klein reveals appalling conditions at a Kansas City abortion mill, including allegations of cannibalism. Cannibalism. The allegation that the physician ate fetal tissue was included in written materials that Klein presented to the committee. The report prepared for Klein after officers conducted an investigation of an unrelated theft complaint at the clinic. So this abortion clinic gets broken into, and they call the police. The police come in, take some pictures. These get handed off to Phil Klein. There must have been an anti-abortion cop in there. Take some pictures, hand them off to Phil Klein, the attorney general, and he calls a press conference and says that this doctor is a cannibal. The doctor name in the allegations is Krishna Rajana, who operates the Affordable Medical and Surgical Clinic in Wichita. He denied the allegations against him in his clinic, particularly that he consumed fetal tissue. That's untrue and a totally, totally made-up story, he said. Rajana says he thinks the attorney general was misled. The doctor says he thinks he is the victim of a political smear staged by abortion opponents. Remarkable. 1-866-889-8894. Telephone number, Tony in Washington, D.C. Hey, Tony, we've only got about a minute. What's up?
Oh, yeah, just very quickly. Isn't this a typical Rovian type of activity once you talk about how you get the, you know, the Garner, Gannon/Garner gay website, and all of a sudden a sensational
let's
event comes
change
in
the
there.
Subject yes
absolutely that's all I wanted to say. It sounds typical talk Karl Rovian.
Yeah, it's interesting that this would pop up right now, although, you know, actually, Tony, I think we have to acknowledge that these people are absolutely unrelenting. They are not going to go away, and they're not going to give up until birth control in the United States, until we're back to where we were in 1956 when that case in Connecticut was Cunningham versus Connecticut or whatever it was, where, you know, the Republicans came in and argued that birth control should be illegal.
Well, this is another technique to keep feeding the right wing. You know, their right wing.
Yeah.
We got Dean on board. This is the counter.
There you go. Yeah.
Take it out.
Yeah. Thanks, Tony. Thanks for the call. Good to hear from you. Yes, it's feed the, you know, get the conservatives hysterical. Whip up the base. 20 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really...
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
Hello, Mama. It's me, Osama. I guess you're worrying, wondering where I've been staying. Got in a world of trouble, lit out on the double, hiding out in Pakistan.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here back with you. Scott in Kalamazoo, Michigan on the line. And then we have Ellen Ratner's report from Talk Radio News Service. Scott, what's up?
Hey, Tom. I just wanted to call and say that I had seen the CNN interview with this Kansas Attorney General last night.
Uh-huh.
Aaron Brown had interviewed him. And one of the questions he asked, and you know, I'm paraphrasing, he had said to him that, you know, on the surface, I'm going to ask you a straight question and try to be respectful. You know, on the surface, this looks like this issue is just about abortion. You know, can you tell me that that's not the case and that this is not just about that? And he didn't answer directly. He just went into, I'm the attorney general and it's my job to enforce the laws.
Yeah.
And,
what
I'm trying to get is that this is what it looks like. And what is coming out as evidence, the two aren't quite going together, and you're not denying that that's not the case.
Yeah, and that's why when I call him up and I say, you know, are you also subpoenaing birth records from hospitals? I don't think they are, and I don't think
a great question. I wouldn't have thought of that. But
right, are they going to go after? Are they going to go after homes for unwed children or unwed mothers? You know, next, and no, they won't. Of course, they won't, because that's a whole different thing. Ellen Ratner's with us with the Talk Radio News Service from. Thanks for the call, Scott. I appreciate it, Ellen. Ellen with Talk Radio News from Washington D.C. Hey, Ellen, welcome to the program.
Well, hi. What we're going to see, really, with abortion, as you know, is it's going to be a patchwork quilt of local regulations and statewide regulations that are then going to impinge on, really, a woman's right to choose.
They already are. They already are. In more than 40% of counties in the United States, women have no access to abortion.
Right. And so it's going to be interesting, particularly with Hillary Rodham Clinton saying, okay, well, we have to make it rare, which, of course, is what her husband said.
Yeah.
But you've seen the polls for her. The liberals kind of look the other way and say, well, we've got to get somebody in there. And she moves so far to the middle that the women who are Republican are moving towards her.
Well, I think everybody wants abortion to be rare, but let's keep it legal.
I don't disagree. There's not a whole lot of Washington news, I have to tell you. And so I'm going to move right to one little issue and then another issue, and that is that General Olson today said that the United States basically should not cut troop strength in Afghanistan. He said insurgents remain a grave threat. And also Christian Science Monitor reported that in Iraq, most of the police organizations, most of the police departments, local police departments, are also compromised by insurgents working for them.
Oh, interesting. Interesting.
The other thing is, of course, this is not news because it was in the New York Times today, but it's interesting. The National Institutes of Health have taken a very strict policy on outside income, but the FDA has not.
Yes.
And 10 of the 32 government drug advisors, said the New York Times today, on the issue of Bextra, Vioxx, and Celebrex, voted essentially the way, at least on two of the drugs, to keep them on the market. 10 of those people had, in fact, worked as consultants for the drug companies.
Right, and probably
on those issues.
And probably all of them hope to one day soon. Can you spell
that's
Billy
right.
Towson?
It's a revolving door. Now, as I said, they cleaned up NIH, but they have not yet cleaned up the situation with the FDA.
Yeah.
Not a good situation.
Yeah, this is remarkable. Just about a minute we have left here, I want to go back to the situation in Afghanistan. General Olson was essentially saying that the narco-terrorist state there is not a warm and fuzzy place?
Not at all. And, you know, of course, I mean, this is what we're hearing. There's elections. Well, as you know, there were elections in Vietnam. But elections do not necessarily mean that things are going well for the country. And
yeah.
If you have insurgents controlling the local populace, you got trouble.
Yeah, and it sounds like, okay, good point. Ellen Ratner, thank you so much for calling with our report from Washington, D.C. today. Have a great weekend, Ellen.
You too.
Thank you. Thank you. It's the Tom Hartman radio program, 29 minutes past the hour, on the place where smart people get their news.
And now for a traffic update, we go to Kelly Clark. Kelly, how's it looking out there?
Well, if you've got to get anywhere, I hope you have lots of time.
Uh-oh.
All northbound lanes at the Taylor Interchange are backed up. Westbound lanes are at a standstill in the off-ramp.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. 27 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman here with you, transforming the world by revitalizing democracy of the United States of America. It's our best of the rest of the news segment. We'll take a few minutes here, take about 20 minutes, and talk to a couple of people who are leading the charge to get the news out to America. First of all, we have Bill Moyer. He's the director and co-founder of the Backbone Campaign. BackboneCampaign.org is the website, a grassroots effort to embolden citizens and elected officials to stand up for progressive values. Hey, Bill, welcome.
Thank you. Very nice to be on your show. Thanks so much for letting me do this.
Glad to have you here. And Michael Giltz is with AmericaBlog.org. And Michael, your blog, or maybe you personally, are the folks who broke the Gannon story. Is that right?
That's absolutely right.
Yeah. Was it you, or was it the blog overall, or how did that come about, Michael?
The blog is led by John Aravosis, who's done a lot of online campaigning. He helped lead StopDrLaura.com, a campaign on Dr. Laura when she was launching her TV talk show. He's been involved in a lot of issues. And we were approached by people when the story broke who came from California and said, hey, we've got information about this, because we had a reputation online for being fair and accurate, and they knew they could trust us with the information, and they provided us with some details that broke the story as far as the photos of James Gawker confirming that he had set up these websites not for other people but for himself, and that he was selling his services as a male escort online.
Right.
So they came to us. We took the information. We tried to get the mainstream media to cover it. And when they got worried or confused or scared by it, we posted it ourselves. And that made the story grow up even bigger.
Yeah. And it has. And it's no sign of it going away. And I noticed that he now has a JeffGannon.com website up where he's asking for donations. And I looked at this thing this afternoon, and I couldn't figure out if it was a pastiche that had been put up by somebody making fun of him, or if it was actually his website. Do you know?
As far as we know, it is his website. Karl Rove cannot be happy with this guy, because he's given press interview after press interview where he's contradicted himself. He's lied to the press. He lied to editor and publisher and said he wasn't going on CNN. And then an hour later, he went on CNN. He was on the Today Show yesterday. And he keeps changing his story. He keeps putting out new information, like the fact that he has a journal, a diary that he's been keeping for the last few years.
Uh-oh.
Now, that may very well be subpoenaed by the people investigating the Valerie Plame affair, the CIA agent who was outed by someone in the White House.
Right, right.
Wow.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with you, Bill. Okay, so Michael, I would say that am I safe in saying, because my question for each of you, my first question was, what's the biggest story of this last week? That at AmericaBlog.org, your big story for the week has been the Guckert story.
Absolutely. We've been getting a ton of traffic, a ton of people, and it's really been great to see AmericaBlog.org and Daily Cause and other bloggers making this story happen. It's genuinely been a story that was broken by the online community and put pressure on newspapers around the country from readers emailing their editors and saying, why aren't you covering this story? We're seeing editorials in the Atlanta Journal-Constitution and other newspapers all around the country building up to the top newspapers, who are now grudgingly beginning to cover this story. I've never seen the mainstream media so leery of a story filled with salacious details and serious questions about national security and the manipulation of the media by the White House.
Yeah, they were sure hot to go after every woman that Bill Clinton ever got within 30 feet of.
Imagine if Bill Clinton had placed a hooker in the White House press room to ask him softball questions for 3 years.
Yeah.
The uproar would have been deafening.
Yeah, just to simplify it, just if Monica had just been a prostitute instead of, an intern. I mean, it's mind-boggling. Okay, so Michael Giltz at AmericaBlog.org, that's your big story. I'm wondering for you, Bill Moyer, at BackboneCampaign.org, now your main mission is not so much reporting the news, although you do that on your website, but it's to stir people up and get people standing up for progressive values, particularly our elected officials. So what's on for your website for this past week, and your listeners and your constituents, the people that you're talking to and dealing with, what's the big story for this past week on your end?
Well, first of all, thank you to Michael and the great work they're doing. This is amazing, this Gannon stuff. We're really working to live in a reality-based democracy, and this is a nice step in that direction. Well, for us, we employ a sort of thank and spank philosophy toward holding an elected official.
Thank and spank? You've been hanging out too much with Jeff Gannon.
We got to keep it on that level, I guess, right now.
Okay.
Just having fun. And this week, our biggest effort is that we collaborated with the AFL-CIO and the NAACP folks in Ohio, and got Stephanie Tubbs Jones a Backbone Award for her challenging the Ohio electors.
Yeah.
And that was a nice collaboration with some excellent organizations and honoring someone who certainly deserved to be thanked.
Yeah.
Now, there are so many out there who deserve to be spanked, we can't even keep up with it. But, you know, with that, that's a big news story for us for this week, and there's been some unprecedented amount of coverage for our organization because of that, and in relationship to Dean and other folks all over the media today. So that's been great for us, and that's hopefully great for the movement, because really what we want to do is we want to provide every tool that we can and every possible, you know, creative idea to help this movement become ever stronger and communicate, be a bridge to folks like the Democratic Party to tell them that they can't afford to take progressives for granted. And having Howard Dean as party chair is an excellent opportunity for them, not because he's a poster child for progressives, but because he provides a conduit to that movement energy that is burgeoning, growing, crystallizing into defining itself and figuring out how it's going to increase its way in American politics.
I have to say, you know, I'm broadcasting live from Vermont. I've lived here for the last 10 years, and when Howard Dean was governor, 8 of those years he was the governor, and more or less, and he was a moderate guy. He was
right.
He's not a bomb thrower. He's not he was a very moderate and fiscally conservative, actually, governor for this state, and I think he's going to do a great job. So Bill, you're with BackboneCampaign.org. Your main outreach is congratulating folks when they do well, and this thing for Stephanie Tubbs. I think that's just great. What do you see, Bill, coming along down the road? What do you see as the stuff that's bubbling up right now that's going to be big next week?
Well, I'm sorry that I'm not more in tune with the next week thing. What we're working on is trying to build connections between progressive groups around the country. So what I hope is bubbling up is that the progressive movement will be finding methods for transcending the isolation created by being associated with one issue or another issue,
yeah,
and be finding ways to collaborate on moving forward an interlocking agenda. That's not really getting to your question, but that is certainly...
No, I get it. One quick question then, Bill Moyer with BackboneCampaign.org. Bernie Sanders is a regular on our program, and Bernie and I did a thing here in Montpelier it was last Sunday. We showed a movie, Orwell Rolls Over in His Grave, and we both got up and gave a little talk. Bernie, far more than me, did most of the talking. But in any case, he made the comment that he is a progressive, not a liberal. And I think that there's some confusion out there, certainly some here. I'm asking people their opinions. What's the difference between a progressive and a liberal?
Well, I think that the liberal label is this weak-kneed, bleeding heart. We've allowed our opponents to brand our movement. And I think that the one aspect of it is that, of the Backbone Campaign, is that we're attempting to rebrand that movement to be, compassionate, courageous, innovative, strong, progressive. Now, I do believe that there is an element of letting go of dogma in being a progressive. I think it's about solving problems, and it's about having the courage and the creativity to be open to addressing the crises that our society and our planet faces, without getting stuck in old solutions, and yet having not hiding from the real problems, really living in a reality-based democracy.
Yeah. Bernie made the comment that he said Hillary Clinton's a liberal, I'm not a liberal, and I thought, oh, that's interesting. I don't, you know, it's I'm still digesting it.
Well, I think that part of it is that some of these folks, like Hillary Clinton. Here's a good example: the progressive movement has put forward a voter bill of rights. That voter bill of rights includes many of the aspects of Hillary Clinton's and Barbara Boxer's and Stephanie Tubbs Jones' Right to Vote Act, Count Every Vote Act of 2005.
Mm-hmm. Right.
There's a lot of wonderful progressive things in that, but what it doesn't include is it doesn't include instant runoff voting. It doesn't include questioning the financing of campaigns or access to the media. Those are where progressives are pushing the envelope to.
I agree with you, Bill. But don't you think that the reason that those things aren't in there is that they thought that that would just be too big a rabbit for that snake to swallow. I mean, it's just not gonna get through if it has all that stuff in it.
Sure. Okay. That's fine. And that's where the movement needs to lead.
Yeah.
So it's not
so,
that.
So we get out in front of those issues and start.
We get out in front. It's I come from the philosophy that it's always the people who lead and the leaders who follow. And even our wonderful Congressman Jim McDermott didn't go to Baghdad on his own accord. He went there because he got pestered by his base.
Yeah, got it. Okay, Bill Moyer with BackboneCampaign.org. Thank you for that. Michael Giltz with AmericaBlog.org. I noticed that there is, I've got this story by Kellyanne Collins. It's KellyanneCollins.com. It must be a blog. That a wealthy Washington socialite is offering a $10,000 reward for proof that Jeff Gannon, an alleged gay, kinky sex prostitute escort, White House reporter, GOP operative, has had sexual relations with top-ranking government officials. Were you aware of this?
No, I'm not. It's news to me. It sounds like the same approach that Larry Flint took.
Yeah.
putting out a wanted poster with lots of cash attached to it.
Well, and he got a bunch of answers. I mean, he brought down several members of Congress. Livingston had to quit, as I recall, and Newt Gingrich. And, I mean, a bunch of people got outed as a result of Larry Flint offering money during the Clinton scandals and discovering that all these Republicans were getting it on with their staff members as well.
That's right. It's not good journalism, but it is good partisan politics.
Yeah, there you go. So what, Michael Giltz with AmericaBlog.org, what do you see as the stories that are bubbling up? What's the hot stuff on your radar right now? Is it going to be the Gannon story just getting bigger and bigger, or do you see other things emerging as well? What are the trend lines that you're noticing?
For us, the Gannon story is getting bigger and bigger. There's a letter circulating in Congress calling for an investigation. Obviously, the Democrats don't control the House or the Senate, so it's very hard for them to get anything going anywhere. But there is a growing push to make something happen. The mainstream media is finally starting to pay attention. If you go to our site today, you can find links to articles by the Wall Street Journal and the LA Times about James Gawker, both of which are terrible. They don't, not either story, not one of them has a quote from people on the other side of the story. Everybody quoted says, oh, this is old media versus new media. It's not a big deal. There's lots of wacky people in the White House press room. There's not one quote in either article from someone saying that yes, this could be, in fact, a very important national security issue, at the very least, if not an example of White House manipulation.
Well, you know, Watergate was just a third-rate burglary for 6 months.
That's right.
I mean, right through the election.
James Guckert is now linked to the campaign to overthrow Tom Daschle's reelection hopes.
Mm-hmm.
He's linked with the bloggers who were paid off by Republicans to spread disinformation and lies about Tom Daschle and attack the news media outlets in his home state that were either supporting him or not attacking him enough to their liking. So this really has a lot wider spread than we knew.
And let's not forget the issue. You mentioned it earlier, and I think it's worth bringing George W. Bush into the discussion. When his father made the comment that outing a CIA agent was tantamount to treason, George W. Had the following to say about what senior administration official in his administration might be a traitor.
And I don't know if we're going to find out the senior administration official. Now, this is a large administration, and there's a lot of senior officials. I don't have any idea.
He doesn't have any idea.
And he doesn't want to have any idea.
Yeah, yeah. So where do you think that's going to go?
Well, James Guckert has a diary, and they're going to be subpoenaing that, hopefully, and to see who he's been speaking to, because there is the possibility that he was getting a lot of scoops eventually. Even though he began as a fake journalist, he got a day pass to the White House press room before he'd written a single article for any media outlet, real or imaginary, in the world. He got a day pass as a reporter before this, front for GOP USA called TalonNews.com even existed.
Right.
So he was literally nobody, and he got a pass as a reporter. How did that happen?
Yeah, now
somebody in the administration must have made that happen.
Michael Giltz with AmericaBlog.org. What are your thoughts on the possibility that the Talon News thing is part of the Reverend Moon's machine?
I haven't heard that link yet, but certainly there's, the link right now is to a top Republican activist in Texas.
Right.
As far as whether Sun Young Moon, I have no idea. I haven't heard that one yet. But it's just in general, it's a bad thing. If Planned Parenthood set up a fake news agency to try and get a reporter into the White House press room to ask harassing calls about or harassing questions about abortion, that would be bad. So these people, whoever is financially backing them, set up a fake news agency to plan a reporter in the White House press room and ask questions that they wanted. And that's wrong no matter what side of the political spectrum they're on.
Yeah, well said. Michael Giltz with AmericaBlog.org, www.AmericaBlog.org, and Bill Moyer with www.BlackBackboneCampaign.org. Bill and Michael, thank you both for being with us today.
Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Do appreciate it. And good luck in both of your marvelous efforts. I think it's just absolutely great. It's the Tom Hartman radio program, The True People's Radio. 10 minutes before the hour.
Attention, Tom Hartman listeners. I'm here with Brush Lintball.
This is the old Brusho, Brush Lintball.
To tell you about DemocraticMatch.com. You're listening to Tom Hartman because you're intelligent.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
Mama, it's hard to hide because you know I'm 6'5" in a land where the people are short.
Oh my, it's the Gulliver story.
Head on down the Loya Jurga, poke around all day at the Sharia court.
Oh, it's the Osama story.
I should be in heaven behind 9/11. By now, at least that's what I thought. But to be a martyr, you gotta get slaughtered. And to do that, you need to get caught.
And the Bush administration has not been able to catch you. Osama, thank you very much. 1-866-889-8894. Telephone number, line one here. Ed in California on the line. Hey, Ed, what's up?
Hey, Tom. I think you missed a story last night on the news. In California, Arnold Schwarzenegger went to a movie theater.
Yeah.
And there was a nurse in the audience wearing her nursing clothes.
Yeah.
And he had the state police take her out and interrogate her until after the movie was over because he felt that she may be against his policy since she was a nurse.
Oh, my God.
And that she was pulled out of the movie theater.
He's trying to bust up the nurse unions?
Oh, yeah. He's trying to do that. But you were just talking about Jeff Gannon.
Yeah.
Well, here's a guy. They let access to the people they want. And the people that are just wearing, she's a common nurse, just sitting there viewing the movie.
She had just come home from, hadn't gone home from work. She just went to the movie from work.
That's
or whatever.
That's right. Arnold comes in. There's something they need to investigate. It was only on the news for a few minutes.
Amazing.
But
amazing.
We're doing that.
Amazing. Well,
we're bubble boys.
Yep, absolutely. Welcome to Bush World. Ed, thanks for the tip. I appreciate
okay.
it. Good information. Now, have we been mooned? This cannonfire.blogspot.com asking this question. More Reverend Moon connections. Bobby Eberle has written for the Washington Times. He's the guy who started GOP USA and hired Jeff Gannon. And Moon's Insight and Human Events magazines. These are three different Moon publications Bobby Eberle has written for. Indeed, most of his non-GOP USA writing career seems to be to veer moonward. Before switching to GOP USA, Gannon wrote for Frontiers of Freedom, which also has Moon links, Violin Francis Bushy. Some speculate that Frontiers of Freedom is the group behind GOP USA. More than that, a Raw Story reader found that GOP USA published a staggering amount of UPI material at the time Gannon began to work for the group. What's the deal, asked this reader. I find it hard to believe GOP USA coughed up the cash for the UPI wire service. Well, guess what? Reverend Moon owns UPI. As detailed in a variety of posts, Moon first came to national prominence in 1976 with Koreagate, the scandal that involved prostitution and the blackmailing of politicians. Sound familiar? Could it be that Reverend Moon is behind this? Could it be that he's even using this to blackmail Republicans to get what he wants? After all, Reverend Moon is getting millions out of the faith-based initiative programs. The plot thickens. Stay tuned. Truth and common sense in broadcasting. I'm Tom Hartman.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
can there be hope when millions starve?
He's the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you. The program where reason is our lifestyle choice. And we run rings around the right wing every day. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number, if you'd like to weigh in on the issues of the day, whatever may be on your mind. Our number for the chat room, which is unusually full today, you can drop by there if you'd like. Great to see everybody. And a fascinating comment that Ben just shared with us about Arnold in the chat room. I'm not going to repeat it on the air without Ben's permission, but it's pretty remarkable. But if you were in our chat room, you would know. You can get there by going to TomHartman.com and click on live chat. Australia. Major General Alan Stretton. He is a retired general, one of the most respected. He's sort of I won't say the Dwight Eisenhower of Australia, but maybe the General Clark of Australia or whatever. Anyhow, he's a very, very highly decorated, highly regarded Major General. Alan Stretton said this from the news.com.au. This is an Australian website, an Australian news site. Major General Alan Stretton said the government, that being the Australian government, would eventually bow to public pressure and withdraw their troops from Iraq, leaving behind a bloody mess. Australia's involvement in Iraq will end in disaster just like Vietnam, he said. Major General Stretton, who served as chief of staff of the Australian force in Vietnam from 1969 to 1970, but is best remembered for his role heading relief operations in Darwin following Cyclone Tracy in 1974, that is best remembered in Australia. Most people in America don't even know where Darwin is in Australia. Anyhow, said there could never be democracy in Iraq. He said the government was being irresponsible in sending even more troops. He was on John Law's radio program on 2UE. This is a Australian radio station. He says, I really believe it will go the same way as Vietnam. We're quoting the general now. It will get no better, only worse, and eventually public opinion in both the U.S. and Australia and elsewhere will demand our troops come back, and when they do, they will be pretending that the locals can handle it all themselves, and we will just have a bloody mess. Major General Stretton said Australia should not have been involved in Iraq in the first place, as there were no weapons of mass destruction and no links with Al-Qaeda. Well, pretty much everybody in America knows that now, except for the Republicans. 70% of those people who voted for Bush don't realize that. But everybody in Australia knows it. And so you get this kind of straightforward reporting in Australia that seems to be lacking here in the United States. Major General Stretton said, and I quote, "The whole lot of it has turned into a bloody civil war. All we are doing is reinforcing disaster. I just cannot understand it." He talks about how the Prime Minister, this John Howard, is now using he's now saying the situation is tilting in our direction. Right? I mean, back when in May, when Georgie flew onto the aircraft carrier, we were mission accomplished. We had won the battle. Well, you know, we haven't won the battle. In fact, one of the folks in our chat room, I believe it's Le Proletariat. I'm not sure who it is. But anyhow, it had said that their counter is that the number of dead U.S. soldiers in Vietnam in Iraq is up to 1,492, the number that corresponds with Columbus's discovery or stumbling across North America. In any case, the point is that the Prime Minister of Australia, John Howard, is now saying, well, the situation is tilting in the right direction. And so Major General Stretton said Iraq was already going the way of Vietnam. And now, again, quoting from the Major General, you would have noticed the Prime Minister use a new word, tilting. That is the same as the graduated response in Vietnam, he said. In other words, you just put a bit more in to stop it tilting the wrong way. It'll end up exactly the same way. The whole thing is flawed strategy. He says this talk about fighting for democracy that is absolute, to use a phrase, and then he uses an eight-letter word that starts with B and is usually abbreviated with two letters in English that I can't say on the radio. He says you have three different people in three different virtually different areas. The most you could have would be some sort of loose confederation. And John Howard, of course, respectfully disagreed. We have some questions on our website, on our message board at tomhartman.com. This one from Callie, who is in West Haven, Connecticut. I have a question idea for Tom and or Bernie about Social Security. It's an idea that goes along with raising or eliminating the cap on Social Security. Callie says, writes, if the cap were raised sufficiently or eliminated altogether, wouldn't we be able to lower the payroll tax rate for Social Security and still have it be solvent? Well, over time, perhaps, Callie, the best guess right now is that if we were to eliminate the cap altogether, that would simply solve the problem. End of discussion. And then Callie goes on to say, wouldn't that really help out the self-employed and small businesses? The conservatives are all for tax cuts, so how could they argue against it and not come across as only wanting to help out the rich? Well, that's how they are coming across. In fact, there's this, you know, weird situation where the first $90,000 of your income you have to pay Social Security tax on, and after that, you're tax-free. So if you're, you know, if you're making $5,000, $10,000 a year flipping burgers at McDonald's or working at Walmart, or $15,000 or $20,000 a year, if working in some place, or $40,000 or $50,000 a year, or you're even, you know, solidly into the working middle class there, I think the median income in the United States is around $35,000 more or less. You're making $40,000, $50,000, $60,000, $70,000, $80,000, $90,000. You're carrying 100% of the load of Social Security. That is to say, all of your income is taxed for Social Security. Whereas if you're making $500,000 a year, or $1 million a year, or $10 million a year, or $100 million a year, only a very small portion of your income is taxed for Social Security, only the first $90,000. So somebody who makes $900,000 a year, only the first 10% of their income gets taxed for Social Security. For someone who makes $9 million a year, only the first 1% of their income gets taxed for Social Security. For someone who makes $90 million a year, only the first 0.1% of their income gets taxed for Social Security. For someone who makes $900 million a year, like Michael Eisner at Disney, only 0.01% of your income gets taxed for Social Security. What's wrong with this picture? Particularly when you've got cons running around like Steve Forbes going, flat tax, flat tax, we need a flat tax, let's get a flat tax. If everybody paid the same, it would be fair. Wouldn't it be fair? Okay. Let's just make the Social Security tax a flat tax. This is not rocket science. and this coming from somebody who's an opponent of flat taxes. I think, you know, flat taxes are regressive enough as it is. I agree with Thomas Jefferson that if somebody, that people should not be taxed at all on the first part of their income that is used to pay for the, what Jefferson referred to as the necessaries of life. For the amount of money that it takes for a person to pay for their home, for their food, for their transportation, for their children, for their medical expenses, for their educational expenses, and to set some money aside for their old age, there should be no tax paid on that at all, on that baseline income. And we've largely agreed with Jefferson for most of the history of the United States that we've had income taxes, relatively recent thing, basically since World War I, but nonetheless, for most of that time, we've relatively agreed with him. We've set the threshold at different places. It would be interesting to see a graph. I'm sure there's one out there on the web. I'll have to poke around of how the income tax has changed, how the bottom, you know, the point where you begin to pay income tax has varied over the years, you know, in inflation-adjusted dollars. Because, you know, certainly these things change. Right now, for example, if the minimum wage today in inflation-adjusted dollars were at the same buying power, the same purchasing power that the minimum wage was back in 1968, it would be over $10 an hour. So it would be interesting to see how the how the income taxes have changed. But anyhow, I view flat taxes as a regressive tax. You know, my opposition to flat taxes is that I don't think people, you know, if you're going to have a flat tax, don't have people pay any tax on the first $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 of their income, that being what it costs to be in the middle class of America and raise a family. At a minimum, in much of the United States, I suppose you could adjust it locally. You could say, listen, for $30,000 a year, you're not able to do that in Los Angeles, for example. Maybe not. Or it's easier to do that in rural Vermont or in rural West Virginia or something. Maybe. I don't know. You know, these are things that we can work out. But the whole flat tax thing, that if we were to do Steve Forbes's idea of everybody pays, you know, a 10%, well, I think it worked out to be 17%. Everybody pays 17% income tax, period. You notice he's not talking about that so much now, by the way, since George W. Bush said, okay, if you earn your money sitting around the pool waiting for the dividend checks to arrive, then you only pay 15% income tax. So all of a sudden, Steve Forbes has stopped talking about a 17% flat tax, because now much of his income comes from dividend checks, you know, dividends that are paid on stocks he owns, and he's only paying 15% on those. If everybody in the country paid a 15% flat tax on all their income, it wouldn't quite be enough to run the country. But if you earn your money on dividends, that's all you pay. Isn't Bush World wonderful? In any case, my point was that I think that the flat tax idea only makes sense if there's a progressive component to it, and that is to say that it doesn't kick in until some certain threshold is hit, where the necessaries of life, as Jefferson said, have been met. And frankly, I think it should be the same way with Social Security, the Social Security tax, frankly. But, you know, here you've got these guys running around going, flat tax, let's have a flat tax. But, oh, by the way, we don't want a flat tax when it comes to Social Security. We only want people making $90,000 a year or less to pay into Social Security. We don't talk about a flat tax when it comes to Social Security, because we just, you know, right now the millionaires are exempted from that, and they would like to keep their exemption, thank you very much. The 100 millionaires, they're exempted. The billionaires, they're exempted from paying, you know, the 12.4% on Social Security. They don't have to pay that. And they would, other than the first $90,000 of their income, and they would like to maintain their exemption. So let's have no talk about flat tax. Have you noticed that ever since the Bush administration rolled out their war on Social Security, that there has not, the word flat tax has not appeared once in the press? Now you know why. Anyhow, hope I've answered your question, Callie. Thank you for posting it on the message board, and thank you for asking it. The broad answer is no, I don't think that would solve, that would lower the rates, but I think it would, yeah, I'm pretty sure it would solve the problem of the diminishing returns. 20 minutes past the hour, the Tom Hartman program.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really...
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back, Van Morrison, one of the great geniuses of music.
And you slowly just walked away.
He is so good.
You never really heard my call when I cried out that way.
And welcome back. 25 minutes past the hour. It's Tom Hartman with you. News without conflicts of global corporate interest and filibustering. God, I just have to share this with you. This is the technique now that George W. has resorted to avoid taking difficult questions. You've got to start noticing this, getting sensitive to this, because this is, whenever he does a press conference, this is what he does. For example, And by filibustering, I mean just, you know, talking and talking and talking so that the other person doesn't have a chance to say something. When he was in Russia yesterday, or the day before, he held a news conference, and he was asked by a reporter essentially about Dan Rather. I mean, this is a big story everywhere else in the world, that the Republicans may have planted this information, that it's out of this journalist, that there's journalistic confusion, shall we say, in the United States. You know, who's a journalist, who's not, the whole Jeff Gannon thing. But, you know, mostly the, you know, Dan Rather getting fired for having the temerity to report a negative story about George W. Bush. I mean, that's how it's being handled by the international press and the corporate taskmasters and whatnot. And so this guy in Russia asked this question. And here he is asking the question.
Alexei Mishkov, Interfax. To follow up on the issue of democratic institutions, President Bush recently stated that the press in Russia is not free. What is this lack of freedom all about?
He starts out by saying that there is a free press in Russia. He's with the Interfax News Service, which is part of it. And then
our aides probably mentioned to you that our media, both electronic and our printed media, provide full coverage of the manifestations and protests in our country. Our regional and national media often criticize the government institution. What about...
But we understand that in America, the press doesn't criticize you and that they don't really cover your protests, that being the implicit message.
Why don't you talk a lot about violations of rights of journalists in the United States, about the fact that some journalists have been fired? Or do you prefer to discuss this in private with your American colleague?
I don't know.
What about, yes. And so now Bush just goes into his filibuster.
What journalists are you referring to? Any of you all still have your jobs?
And then he looks around the room.
I think it's important. Any viable democracy has got a free and active press. Obviously, if you're a member of the Russian press, you feel like the press is free. And that's...
And then he just starts going on and on and on.
I talked to Vladimir about that. And he wanted to know about our press.
Yeah, you bet.
Nice bunch of folks.
Nice bunch of folks, yeah, see? In private with Vlad. I'm telling you, Vladimir Putin sat George W. Bush down and said, you know, I'm going to out you if you keep hassling me like this. You know, that's it's got to be that.
Fired by the owners of a particular outlet or network. But free press is important.
You can get fired by the owners of a particular outlet or network. Yeah. So, but he's just blithering. And it goes on for another minute and a half. We don't have enough time before the break for me to play the whole thing for you. But it's just the whole point of why he keeps talking and talking and talking and talking is he doesn't want this guy to ask a follow-up, doesn't want this guy to point out, he doesn't want to go down the road this guy has started about whatever happened to the free press in the United States.
Obviously, there is got to be constraints. I mean, there's got to be truth.
Oh, there's got to be constraints on the press corps, right?
And if somebody violates the truth, those who own a particular newspaper or
those
who
own them,
electronic station need to hold people to account.
And
he just keeps going.
He's the Energizer Bunny here. 29 minutes past the hour. I'm Tom Hartman.
A party at Ed's house.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
If I could get out of this kidney dialysis, I'd be a free man, but alas.
Oh, it's Osama's song.
I'd be able to follow that cable right down to the middle of Krakistan Pass.
And he's still hiding out there. Bleeding heart leftist tree hugger in our chat room says... democracy? President Putin was elected by a democratic process, was he not? Rule of law? Did the Russian Federation break every rule in the book by breaching the Geneva Convention and the UN Charter, launching an illegal war based on barefaced lies, slaughtering tens of thousands of innocent people in a sovereign nation? No. I think not, and I agree with you. Bleeding Heart, I agree with you that that is probably what Vlad impaled George with on the full moon day that they met together in the castle in Slovenia. It's remarkable. It's like, it's right down the road from Transylvania, you know. Somebody else had made an excellent point in the chat room that I can't find it. Anyhow, the thing is, sometimes it scrolls so fast, it's like great stuff gets said and pshw, it's gone. Anyway, PBS offers a censored version of Frontline. Now, this show is coming up. And, maybe it's already for Tuesday night. Yeah, it might have already happened. Anyhow, whether it's last Tuesday or next Tuesday, I'm not sure, frankly, given the story that I have in here in front of me. But the whole idea that PBS is offering a censored version of the program raises an interesting point. And then there's a larger point behind that, which is the one that nobody wants to talk about. Let me get to the smaller point first. This is from the story in the Sacramento Bee by Rick Cushman. First, there were the inane indecency complaints about the Olympics and about Saving Private Ryan. Then some wackos went after SpongeBob SquarePants. SpongeBob, of course, is a cartoon. Now PBS, wary of fines from the Federal Communications Commission, has told its local stations that it would not protect them if they wanted to air the original version of a Frontline documentary Tuesday night that follows American soldiers in Iraq. Why? Because throughout the hour, there are 13 expletives uttered by the soldiers. So what Frontline has done is they have produced a version of the documentary with the 13 words edited out because producers understand local sensitivities. Now, I have to tell you, as a screaming, bleeding heart liberal, whatever you want to call it, progressive, fit your label on me, whatever. I have to tell you, I don't have a problem with this. In fact, I think PBS is being wise because there are these 7 words that, you know, we as a society up to this point in time anyway have agreed that we don't want on the air. Now, I think it's dumb. I don't think that people are harmed by words, by and large, at least not words describing bodily functions. I think that it is possible to harm people Adolf Hitler rose to power on words, so words do have meaning and consequence. But in any case, I agree with George Carlin and Lenny Bruce before him that the obscenity laws are silly. But nonetheless, they're there. And they're there because a majority of we the people have said, you know, we'd like to keep our airwaves sort of clean. And so I think that, you know, collectively we should respect that. So I don't have a problem with Frontline bleeping out. Just like, you know, The Daily Show does with Jon Stewart. I don't have a problem with them bleeping out obscenities and offering that censored version to their stations. And if my local station was the one that ran the censored version and I lost the opportunity to hear soldiers swear 13 times, I really, frankly, wouldn't feel like I'd lost much. Here's the issue that's the larger issue. Everybody's in a tizzy. And the media and the press are all full of discussion about, oh my God, PBS, or should I say, oh my gosh, PBS is engaging in censorship, right? They're censoring Frontline. They're taking out those expletives at the, and earlier, CBS was afraid to run Saving Private Ryan because the soldiers swear in there. Well, people swear in war. I don't know why they didn't run Saving Private Ryan and just beep out the swear words. Everybody would figure out what's going on. But as I said, this is the small issue. The censorship that really worries me is not this kind of censorship. The censorship that worries me is the censorship that is, in my opinion, the real reason why the network was pressured not to run the movie Saving Private Ryan, which is that there are topics that are not being discussed, that there are topics that are verboten. If you saw the movie Control Room, which is the story of an Al Jazeera reporter, very decent fellow, you know, and him and his family and the whole thing, and he's very pro-American, actually, as is his boss. Control Room is one of the most poignant, touching, compelling, and powerful movies I think I've seen in the last 10 years. It stuck with me for months, the same way that that Sophie's Choice did, you know, almost, although the Control Room is a documentary. And it's basically just it's a documentary about Al Jazeera and its reporting in Iraq. And they're following this guy around, and Don Rumsfeld warns this guy not to report on what's going on in Iraq. And the guy persists on reporting, and toward the end of the movie, as he's standing there reporting, a missile comes in and blows him up. A U.S. missile pointed at him intentionally. Yeah, this is not a secret. I mean, you know, the whole world knows about this. Anybody in America who read the news reports at the time knows about this. And then Don Rumsfeld holds a press conference and basically brags about killing a reporter. And this is all in the movie. And again, the movie is not a propaganda piece. It's just straight stand-up reporting. There's virtually nothing. None of these facts are being, you know, in dispute. I mean, you could learn the same stuff that I just shared with you if you've carefully watched the evening news in America. It's just that they were little tiny stories rather than, you know, turned into a movie about the guy and his wife and how she reacted after he was killed and his boss and everything else. So the president of CNN, Eason Jordan, or not the president, I forget his title now, is one of the CNN's executives, is over in Europe, and he goes, yeah, the U.S. military is killing reporters. Well, everybody in the world knows that, but you can't say it in America. Now he's fired. He's resigned. That's the kind of censorship that I'm concerned about. That's the real obscenity, is that we, the people, are not being informed. That the press is self-censoring itself. I don't care if they censor out a few swear words. I don't care if they censor out a few four-letter words. You know, it just doesn't bother me. What does bother me is that they're censoring out enormous amounts of information. That there are entire topic areas that don't get touched because they don't hew to the corporate line, because they're uncomfortable to this administration, because they're not the... You get it. You get it. So enough of that rant. Let's go to the phone line and hear what folks have to say. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number, Francis in Humboldt County, is on the line in California. Hey, Francis.
The other day, I'd originally called about something else. We got onto a better topic. But here's the something else. It was a question about the name, I guess, Mnarich or Mnarich, in connection with the Lynn Stewart situation.
Right.
And I had tuned in late and didn't know the connection. I wondered if it might be Ed Mnarich.
You know, I have to say, Francis, I don't remember. I'm sorry. There's so much stuff, so many stories that go through
well,
here.
Does this ring any bells? I had, was it Ed Mnarich? Mnarich, Mnerich, was the magistrate in San Antonio who set my bond a couple of times back in the mid-90s.
Yeah.
And I've had enough coincidences in my life that I wanted to make sure that this wasn't another one of.
Yeah, I'm not really sure. The only thing I could suggest is if you have access to our archives, go back and listen to that show on that day and get, and I would have given the details on the air, but you know, after I use material, it goes in a box, and that box is about you know, several feet deep in paper, and not everything sticks in my brain. I'm sorry.
I'll occasionally go on the web. Can you give the exact way to get to your archives?
Just go to tomhartman.com, and right across the top, there's a link that says Listen to Archives.
Thank you very much.
Sure. Thanks for calling, Francis. Good to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894. Helen in West Virginia on the line. Hey, Helen. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. I hope I want to change the subject for a second.
That's fine.
Something was bothering me last Wednesday in our paper, making a comment of 6 and 10 say the United States is ready for a female president.
Mm-hmm.
And being a female, I'm not for that.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, Margaret Thatcher, if you have a conservative point of view, Margaret Thatcher seemed to do a pretty good job in England. I mean, you know, I disagreed with her politics, but she was, I thought, a pretty good leader. I thought Golda Meir, frankly, was the best leader that Israel's ever had.
Yes.
And
I agree. I like
And Sonia Gandhi did a good job in India. What's wrong with the United States?
Well, I don't think we're ready for it. I feel we need a strong male. I don't think a woman can handle the whole situation. They've got 53% for Hillary, and they've got 43% for Condoleezza Rice and 33% for Elizabeth Dole.
Yeah.
None of which of the above that I would vote for.
So what type of woman would it take for you to vote for, Helen?
I would think the times are so hard, we need more masculine.
We need more testosterone, more macho.
Yeah. You can put it that way.
Don't you think that part of the reason why times are so hard is because we've had too much testosterone, too much macho?
No, but with this president we have.
I mean,
he came on macho, and he wants to be a wartime president. I can see other men that want to step in that, well, Kerry didn't want what Bush wants. So
yeah.
I really feel that the people just had their eyes closed.
Yeah.
And it's totally behooves me to think, hopefully, that people wouldn't be so quick to jump on this situation and think about it. And I would hope that Hillary wouldn't run, because I called her office to ask her to stand with my senator and not vote for the Iraqi war.
Mm-hmm.
But she went ahead and did it, and she was a first lady of this country. She should have known better.
Yeah.
And I also hear that the president, ex-president Clinton, is getting closer with this senior Bush, and I don't go along with that.
Yeah.
They don't get along with us, and I don't think we ought to be bosom buddies.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
pardon my French.
No, your point is well taken, Helen, and I have not yet formed an opinion about Hillary Clinton's presidency or presidential ambitions.
She's agreement a lot with Lieberman. I've seen
yeah.
her a lot with Lieberman.
She has a lot of proving to do to me. I there's too much of the DLC stuck to both of them, frankly, to make me extremely comfortable with either Bill or Hillary. Too much of the Democratic Leadership Council, the let's get in bed with the corporations bunch.
I agree.
And that bothers me more than the fact of her gender, frankly.
Oh, thank you so much.
So, thank you, Helen. I appreciate the call. Good to hear from you. And although, you know, I think that the interesting thing is the number of Americans who would hold Helen's point of view that we should be led by a man rather than a woman. I mean, obviously, for much of the history of this country, that has been the view. And it's interesting, the countries that are even more conservative, as in traditional, like India, for example. Very true. I've worked in India. I've lived in India. Very, very. I can't say I've lived there for a long period of time, but I've spent months in India. Very conservative, very traditional culture. I mean, the caste system is even still. It's not supposed to be there, but it is. And yet, they elect a woman as president. Pakistan, a very conservative nation. Indonesia, very conservative nation. They've elected a woman. The Philippines, very conservative, very Catholic. So, you know, some 80% Catholic and 20% Muslim. I mean, the extremes of Islam and the extremes of Christianity. Very socially conservative, the Philippines. And they elected a woman as president. So what is different about the United States? Maybe it's that we perceive ourselves as the head cop for the world, that we're the head, we're the empire, we're the leader of empire. I don't know. It's an interesting one. 1-866-889-8894. Sean in Indianapolis, Indiana on the line. Hey, Sean, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom. Hold on. I'm sorry.
That's okay. You still there?
Yeah.
Yep, so what's up?
I think J. Edgar Hoover was this country's most powerful woman.
Yeah, J. Edgar. Well, he looked good in that red dress, you know,
yeah,
that Carlos Marcello took those pictures of in Santo Traficante.
I got three really quick questions. About
okay, your voice is really faint, Sean. If you can get your mouth closer to the microphone, it'll
yeah,
work out a lot better.
I'm sorry. Hold on. Is that better?
That's much better. Thank you.
I'm sorry.
That's okay.
It happens when I'm on the air. I got three really quick questions, and I'll pick them off the air.
Okay.
First of all, how's your dad?
He's fine. He has surgery March 1st. Thank you for asking.
Good. Okay. And when you play a satire at the beginning or the end of a break, could you please tell them who it is and where I can get that music?
I should more often do that. Very often, I don't have any idea who it is because I don't have anything to do with the bumper music. Louise puts together the bumper music and organizes it, and I don't know who they are. So, but well, if you have specific questions, drop us an email or post them on the message board, and we'll get you the answer.
Okay, great. Because on the website, what a lot of other talkers are supposed to do.
I know. I know. And I would love to do that. And I'd also like to put together, you know, on our website, a link to the information that we're talking about. We just haven't had the staff to do that so far, Sean.
Okay.
So thanks for the call. Great to hear from you. I appreciate it. 10 minutes before the hour, the pill that will help you escape the matrix. It's the Tom Hartman program. That's me. We'll be back.
The following phone call was not recorded on February 30th, 2004.
Thank you for calling about DirecTV. My name is Lynn. How can I help you?
Thank you, sir. Thank goodness.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
We're just living our American dream. The CEOs are playing for the Bush-Cheney team. My president, he got you all scared. The billionaires are coming, so you better beware.
Oh, look out, it's the billionaires for Bush.
Everybody stands, parents, lockers, get daughters. Here comes the billionaire.
The billionaires are in the house.
The billionaires are in the White House. We're dining on pheasants, we're dining on sprouts. Yeah, the billionaires are in the house. Cheney worked for us as Halliburton chief exec. Each year we're cutting Nick another $1 million check. These federal contracts just land in our lap. We keep getting away with all the craziest crap. We're ripping off the Pentagon for soldiers' meals. We brought Nigerian officials making energy deals. We say Bush is our president. You know we ain't kidding. He's taking our money and doing our bid.
Yes, it's the Billionaires for Bush. Sean, I can tell you, I know that bumper music is from BillionairesForBush.com. So just... thank you for raising the issue. Xavier in Santa Cruz, our last call of the day. Xavier, before you do this, I just want to thank Ira for the work he's done all this week. I thank Rama for filling in on Monday, Louise for programming our show, Shelby for streaming us on RadioPower.org, and Ben for streaming us on WhiteRoseSociety.org, and Jay for our intro music, and the folks in our chat room for showing up all this week, and wish everybody a happy Friday. I just don't want to forget to get that out. So, Xavier, welcome to the program, and thank you for calling.
Okay. I just wanted to weigh in on, I would really like to see a woman for president, but I have a concern. I've had a couple of women, as bosses, and, what I'm looking for in a woman is somebody who's mature and doesn't have a chip on her shoulder towards men. And I think if we could get a situation where we can find a woman who is into that, because a lot of times what happens is, like you were talking about testosterone,
mm-hmm.
whenever somebody mentions testosterone, that to me sounds like how it would sound to a woman if you say, oh, you're just hysterical.
Uh-huh.
You know, testosterone is a very good chemical. It has a lot of good attributes, and women have testosterone too.
Sure.
So,
just in much smaller quantities.
Yeah. Working-class men are... just as oppressed as just about any other group.
I don't disagree with you, Xavier, from society as a whole. But on the other hand, do you see large numbers of violent crimes being committed by women in the United States?
Well, not directly, but
no, neither do I.
Women, a lot of times, a lot of violence is perpetrated at the proxy of women.
Well, that could be, but I still agree with my old friend Ned Hollowell that testosterone is the most dangerous drug that's ever been invented.
Yeah.
That without it, we probably wouldn't have the vast majority of our wars.
Well, I'll call in some other time and speak on that too. But
okay.
I don't want to get off on too many tangents here. But I have some views that why men are more violent than women. I think a lot of times.
You think it's reactivity?
I think it's because we expect that out of men. Like talking about women and children in a war, we're always concerned about women and children getting killed, but men are somehow like cannon fodder.
Have you read Susan Faludi's books, Stiff, the one about the situation with men, and the previous one about women? I forget the title.
Yeah, I read the previous one, and I have the previous one, and whenever that new one came out, I said, I got to read that. Yeah, but I haven't yet.
Yeah, it's about 700 pages, but it's amazing. It's just story after story after story of...
yeah.
Of, you know, average guy just getting smashed by the system, and it's about how men are crushed by the system. Not
a lot of
not
men
by
are,
women, but by the system.
Yeah, a lot of men, I think, wouldn't be anti-feminist. It's just that they got some pain of their own that is they don't have an outlet for.
Yeah. Well, see, I my take on it, Xavier, is that that's just endemic to our culture. That's our society. That's men and women. But anyhow, it's an interesting topic, as you said. We'll get into it in some depth some other time. Thanks for the call, though.
Thanks.
Great to hear from you. Have a great weekend. And the same to everybody who's listening. Thanks for being with us all this week. Thanks for listening to the program today. Thanks to our sponsors, particularly Small Dog Electronics and DemocraticMatch.com, EcoWine.com, and all the folks in our chat room. I think I thanked you before. We'll see you all next week. Happy Friday, TGIF, Shabbat Shalom. See you Monday.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
This is Veronique Raskin. I'm the